we are at the foot of Mount Sinai. Because tomorrow evening we begin Shavuot. Yes. This holiday after the beginning of Passover, second night, remember we begin to count the Omer. We have three different readings as to why this 49 days. For others it is called Pentecost, 50. We take a day off, 49, 7 of 7 weeks, from the beginning of the end of the barley harvest to the beginning of the wheat harvest. Also our celebration from Exodus to Revelation. And so while we're beginning in Midbar, in our Torah portion, for the regular, cycle of the year, we're really in Bamidbar here as we return to Exodus. So I'm gonna ask you all now to turn to page 412 or Parshat Yitro. Exodus 19. My name is Rabbi Micah Hyman. I'm thrilled to be here. I could give him my bio, but you know, you could figure it out. Facebook it, you know. We're here, we're together, and I really do need from you, your input, and Torah is something that is hitpael, reflexive. And so you'll get to know me a little bit through my style. We're going to be, is the volume okay? I will enunciate to the best of my ability. But it's a little chaotic experience, Mount Sinai. You know, how you find order from chaos is not an easy thing. So the first question that I want you guys to have in your minds is, when have you felt this simultaneous experience of absolute chaos and total clarity? Last night. Must have been a good show. Yeah, or all the time, perhaps. And this is... where revelation is no, absolutely not, is that sweet spot. It is both timely and timeless, so it could be last night or 10,000 years. And the reason I want to start in chapter 19 before we commence into the actual reading of the Torah is just to hear the Hebrew of this introduction. B'chodesh ha-shlishi letzet b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, in this third month, which is Sivan, or the month of Gemini, according to the Mazalot and Midrash. They left Me'eretz Mitzrayim. You have to get the context. So just as I talked about Passover, Shavuot doesn't make any sense without this initial leaving, yeah? And then it says, Me'eretz Mitzrayim, the next day, on that very day, and that is not what Bayom Hazeh means. What is Bayom Hazeh mean? Zeh hayom, this day, right now. So I don't know if any my kids love these science fiction, you know, shows, or I liked Land of the Lost. They had an ability to kind of open up the space-time, you know what I'm talking about, and they rip the fabric of time and enter in. This is what our context is. So we all participate at Sinai Bayom Hazeh. So simultaneously, Torah is allowing us to return back to the Exodus of Egypt and to come to this wilderness. And I love how it's not a desert. It's a thicket. It's kind of, I don't know, the canopy. I think more Brazil than Egypt at this point, because let's just remember, as far as, was it desert landscape to, these back 4,000 years? No, it was a very different kind of topology. But here, Bayom Hazeh, we come to Midbar Sinai. So I really want to put you in that place, and that's how our context is we are there, Bayom Hazeh. And often Torah, when it says Ad Hayom Hazeh, until this very day, Torah does contextualize this historical experience. So we don't have to go, well, if I were there in 20,000 CE, BCE, then I must have. No. Bayom Hazeh. So it contextualizes this very much in the present. And so I want to be with you right now, in the present, where God is speaking to Moses, and the people are ve'yachanu b'midbar ve'yachan sham Yisrael neged ha'har. They've made this journey, and now I'm on verse, the end of verse 2. Israel encamped in front of the mountain. It does not say that. Okay, so this is what I do a lot of times. I'm going to take the Hebrew, give the translation, and tell you why it's such a terrible translation. I love...
Let's stop there, because I've never heard that.
Yeah, no, so this is the first time. Translation, it's like, you know, it's like kissing through chainmail. It's just really hard to get the living text from the English. Because Vayachan Sham Neged Ahar, they are appositional at this point. Neged, benigud, they are against this mountain. And it really is a mountain. I mean, how do you enter right now? I mean, someone was telling me that terrible traffic, right? You still probably are in your car. Or like, oh, that email. It's really hard and you're up against a mountain in a sense. Now, we've all felt independently up against this mountain, and this is going to be scary. Because, ooh, brown, perfect for mountain. What I do want you to realize is just the context of this initial description of them leaving the narrow straits. Yeah, there's the narrow straits, one lane, no easy pass, you can't get around it. And now the encampment is Yisrael right here, right? They're right here, Neged Ahar, against the mountain. And what is that metaphor? That they are ready, they have left, they don't know what they're ready for, and they're against the mountain. Neged Ahar. Yes. It is not pyrotechnics yet. They're simply looking up at a mountain. Like you have an appointment and you're on San Vicente and some guy is dropping off 10 key, whatever they're doing, and they're really up against it. Bayom Hazeh, right now, in this moment. And so in that preparation, God gives the most beautiful poem to Moses to explain to him. And he called from this mountain, Vayikra alav min ahar lemor, saying, now just, I'm going to be very clear, it doesn't say, God said, past tense. Lemor. It's a continual operation, and I believe that this is an ongoing communication that says, you to the house of Jacob, children of Israel, bring you back to Genesis. Not that Exodus story, but the parents, the ancestors, your father, your grandfathers. You saw what I did to the Egyptians. I took you on eagle's wings. Kanfei Nesharim. Has anybody seen, by the way, this is an aside. Oh, when I do this, this is a basketball term for taking a 20. This will be a 20-second aside. So that with children of eagles... actually learn to fly. I don't know any bird specialists here. So what they do is they carry them on their wings. Have you seen, do you know this? I don't know what you've learned. I mean, you've got a great rabbi. So there's these eagle's wings, right? And so how do you teach your kid to fly? You're flying. You drop down and the kid goes, whoa, 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 whoa. That's carrying on eagle's wings. And so they really nestled. Sometimes I think eagle's wings, I don't want to be deodorant. I want that feeling of nurturing. Tachat kanfei shechina is not under the wings. It's in between these two wings. And how do you learn to fly? You drop down. You feel that sense, that vertiginous sense, and then you come right back. So he has changed the metaphor entirely, God, or she, he, what, God, from I'm up against a mountain to no, no, no. I've carried you on eagle's wings. I've given you flight. And you will be my people if you keep these commandments. All of this is mine, and therefore, you are mine. I'm here on Exodus chapter 19, verse 5. If you, ata, now, present time, shamoa tishma'u bekoli, if you truly understand this call, this voice, and protect and keep this brit, then you will be to me this treasured people. Now, I don't see Mikol Ha'amim as distinct, better than. This is a unique relationship that we have, this leadership amongst the peoples of the earth, because Ela HaDevarim, and this is what I want you to communicate. A special, unique relationship, not superior, but a unique relationship. And so, Moses says, God has spoken all of these words, and I'm just going to speak in that rabbinic prophetic voice that we often do in a lower register. Moses came and summoned the elders and put all that God had said to him. And all the people said, All that God has spoken, we will do. Kol asher diber Adonai na'aseh. And Moses brought back the people's words, etc., etc. It's beautiful. And then he says, go to the people. Now we're turning the page, chapter 19. God says again to Moses, Lech el ha'am. Go to the people. Don't stay up on the mountain. And kidashtem otam. We're on verse 10 now. Stay hayom umachar. V'kidashtem. Stay pure could not have a worse translation. I am sure you have talked about what Kadesh means. It is not purity in that sense. And I think we have, holy.
Or whole.
Whole. W-H-O. Yes. And go to the laundromat. Okay. So has anybody on Yom Kippur taken out their whites and see the stain from breakfast? Has anybody had their tallis and they're just ready to like feel like, okay, I just left the mikvah and then there's a stained tallis? No? No one's had this out? Oh, come on. You didn't ever go to a meeting and you were so comfortable and the airplane just jostled you right as you were taking it? Oh no, this was a big meeting and now I have. So, the kipsuat simlotam, to be able to wash your clothes, we're in the desert, but there's something material. And so I have a degree in material culture and textiles. It's really one of my favorite loves is reading text from textiles. So, I'll just give you a small example. Mayolica plates, do you know these like lusterware plates from southern Spain? Many of these designs come from textiles. And so here we actually have how important textile, material culture is to approach holiness. I just love that. Let them be ready on that third day. Day number 3, God will vayered Adonai. God will descend le'enei in the vision of all the people al Har Sinai. So we've changed our perspective from neged ha'har to God being on, and you now higbalta ha'am and surround them. So first they're encamped up against it. And then the most radical reshifting, for me it's radical, the radical reshifting is surround this mountain and say, set the bounds, higbalta saviv, around saying, watch out, don't go up on the mountain and touch it, because anybody who touches the mountain will be put to death. Okay. I'm not a magical thinker. I do believe in God deeply, but I don't believe in a hocus-pocus God. And I don't think our Torah does either. Go into your childlike Hebrew school lesson state and have the really angry expatriate Israeli. What does it mean to not touch the mountain? I'm sorry, bad, fake Israeli accent. What did you guys think when you were young, or just when you've heard this story? If you touch the mountain, what did you guys imagine that was the magical experience of Hashem, Moshe, and this mountain and all the people around it saying, don't touch it? What did you think was that was about? Curious.
Zapped,
right? It's electrified. And why? Why can't you go up the mountain? Hey, you just told me I was going to be a mamlechet kohanim. I'm going to be a whole nation of priests. What's up with this 1% stuff? Or 9%, actually, new studies, 9% stuff. What's going on? So, yes, please.
To me, it's the mountain is so, Amy says supercharged, but it's there's a holiness that if we touch it, it's just beyond our, it will kill us.
It is so supercharged, I love it. It is so radically supercharged because God's on top. And Moses is right there. So people have to stand away from the mountain. But that also implies the mountain itself has become somehow potent with fire. Almost, it's this altar is the mountain. Okay. possible. I'm trying to give some alternative explanations that don't actually electrify that mountain. Yes?
You get a better perspective of the mountain if you're not on it.
Ah, okay. So, now you're beginning this answer. Better perspective of the mountain. Certainly when you're on the mountain, what are you seeing? You're between, you want to talk rock and a hard place. I just don't even know where my next step is. I don't know how I'm going to get up the mountain. And you're equally all from slightly different vantage points having that same perspective. Now, let's look at the text. It says, when it says you'll be put to death, what did you guys think? You touch the mountain, you get electrocuted, right? But it says mot yumat. Mot yumat means you will be put to death, which implies what, as opposed to you shall surely die?
Human intervention.
Correct. It is a human response. So now think with me, which implies it's not electrocuted. You know what happens when you touch a mountain? You touch a mountain. Okay, so this is a little negative theology we're going to have to walk through. Okay, not that. It's not electrocuted. We all have to stay at an equal space around this mountain. So what's up with that? Why? Why will you certainly die? And now I actually want to go back to Adam and Eve that says, if you eat this apple, Eve, you'll certainly die. Well, what, were they going to live forever if they didn't eat the apple? Nah, I'm a little cynical. Yes?
So does it sort of go back to part of the central Sinai experience, which is, you know, the faith in the face of adversity, that during this whole process, even getting to the mountain, and when they were wandering around before they got to the mountain, the Israelite people were losing faith. They were going to go back. It's too hot.
Right. Complaining, struggling,
so,
fighting.
So now suddenly, you know, they're being told, don't touch the mountain. So if anything, it's like, are we going to listen to God or are we not?
And what would it mean not to listen to God?
Well,
I'm gonna jump this.
Calves and maybe doing other
and
things.
Climbing mountains. I'm gonna climb this on my own. Have you ever felt this like in a team experience where you're like, I know, it's a long place. We've got the strategic plan. It's still in incubation, but you guys just do your daily work, be together, and then there's that guy that says, I'm a disruptor. I'm out. I'm going to take my own. I've got a mission from God. And I'm going to start climbing this thing on my own. Because here's the scariest thing about this, and I just think of this, and I'll just, full disclosure, sometimes I'm insecure. Because, I'm just saying, as a human being, sometimes I'm insecure. If I'm on this side of the mountain, and you're on the other side, I'm just, imagine, and listeners, forgive me, you can't imagine, well, you can, but just, there's a room filled with people, am I talking? There's a room filled with people here, and there's this open space, and the microphone should be where the mountain is. Here's the mountain, right? Here's the mountain, and we're all equally standing around the mountain. You're on the other side of the mountain. Remind me your name again?
Mickey.
Say?
Mickey.
So Mickey, I know you for more than just chauffeur. I just got to figure out where our congregation in Ojai. I'm not sure, Mickey. I'm not sure. I'll find it. What can't I see on the other side of the mountain? If there's this huge mountain here,
can't see Mickey.
I can't see Mickey. And now just think if I'm an insecure man, and I am, what am I thinking? What am I thinking Mickey's up to?
You're not going to affect me.
Mickey's going to climb the mountain.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to happen to him. Moses climbed the mountain. The elders climbed the mountain. I want my piece of my mountain. Welcome to society. King of the hill. And then what's this metaphor again? If everybody tried, this happens in life, that I'm going to try to take a step up because I'm not sure what you're doing. You're taking a step up. I'm taking a step up. What happens when 600 units all try to climb that mountain simultaneously? Uh-oh. Not just crowded, king of the hill, and guess who falls? Actually, we all fall. Which is why I love that dollar bill, aside from the Illuminati stuff. There's that pyramid. And this is by the way, this is why I hate pyramids so much, not just Egypt. It's a Ponzi scheme. I'm all of a sudden creating hierarchies, which is a mamlecha kohanim, is actually the humility to stand at the base of the mountain, knowing you're on the other side, And actually, I know that the ECCE, those are great kids. They're doing their thing. This synagogue's alive. We're here studying Torah. There's about to be meditation. This means I'm not worried. Oh, wow. Is Rabbi Bernstein going to be doing something different? Then maybe I need to meditate now. That's not at the base of the mountain. Or think about your siblings, or think about even your parents. How do you kaved avicha et imecha? They're not going to respect me. I need to do it. I can't see them, but I can feel them. And this is all human-based to a God that I can't see and I can't touch. And I've been told explicitly that Moses, you can't see my face, but you still want to. So the metaphor that I want to have is, you know those climbing walls? You ever since take your kids or grandkids? So they have these climbing wall birthday parties. Oh, try the climbing wall. You get on the... Oh, God, such a schlep. And then you're climbing. It's not really that fun, quite frankly. And then, like, what do you get to do? Bing! Then there's the birthday kid. And he may or may not be the greatest climber. But everybody's at that base of the mountain looking up, and they're like, go! Go! I think you get more of the mountain experience at that, as you say, base camp, celebrating that representative that we all know, we're going to share, and the cake tastes so much better than, I got to this level, I got to that level. And so here is why I really believe it is sakol yisakel, which is, now I'm back, either stoned or, it's not really shot. That's a bad translation. But that we have to ensure society that keeps a level playing field, and that holiness is not necessarily trying to alot, to rise, but it's to maintain a grounded center around an insurmountable object to ineffable subject, to something that I cannot see, but I know. Yes, yes.
I'm also seeing a degree of separation from those of us at the bottom of the mountain looking up, and the mountain itself and what's on and in the mountain. Is that part of the metaphor as well, that we're meant to be separated?
There's a distance. It's clear. I mean, we could have used river. We had, you know, we've had going through Mitzrayim. It could have been that we came to a lake and we all immersed together. There are other metaphors. We've had the manna of, you know, coming from heaven as rain and sustenance of a continual. I do think it's got to be challenging. And it's also Moses and Adam and Eve for that matter, and Jacob for that matter, and Abraham. It ain't easy.
But we keep studying and trying to get closer to that mountain and understanding the height and the strength of that mountain, even though we're not permitted to touch it.
Right.
Our study is an effort to get us into that mountain and understanding.
Okay, so is it trying to get us into the mountain or under the mountain? It's trying to do something, and not a seva nishma, it's a collective to say, you know what? I'm working so hard to get to know you. I mean, I'm literally in this bayom hazeh, in this real time. I'm working so hard to get to know you from your questions. What's really the answer coming back to me? I'm learning about myself. Am I really trying to understand KI? Of course I am, personally.
Well, in our study, we're trying to understand our own lives as well.
Yes.
And a pattern for our lives and a model that we see from these stories for our lives. I'm thinking Kilauea right now.
Yes,
Don't try to climb that mountain.
And it's smoking. I mean, this is actually, I was going to go there. This Hawaii, this very potent. How do you get such beauty? You don't want Hawaii. If you don't want an atoll, you're going to have to do away with lava and earthquakes and all of these beautiful tectonic shifts. Tough, violent, powerful, and yet, yes.
So we hear fear of God, awe of God. That's really what this story is about. The separation is awe.
Yes, awesome, mighty, and I carry you on eagle's wings. See, there's a... I don't want to say the feminine aspect because it's, yeah, I'm just not masculine, nurture. Feminine. Nurture. So, yes and. Mm-hmm. Avinu Malkeinu, intimate, infinite. But this point about Higbalta that I really want to stress is, how do I best understand Mickey? is to understand that he is in that same place that I can't see, and know that we're really connected in this holy endeavor, even though I feel so isolated. I mean, I can't tell you how many strollers you see, and everybody's in their own silo of solipsism. That
with your phones.
Right. Totally, quote unquote, plugged in, but checked out. And yet, if I can see that on the other side of the mountain, everybody's dealing with the same thing.
So you asked earlier, how many of us have confronted chaos and contentment at the same time?
Yes.
Everybody here has.
Right.
We all have.
And so, and then how to define that moment? How do you put words to it? Vayedaber, dibur, eser, dibrot. It's not 10 commandments. Utterances. Which is why I think it really starts, and we're gonna get there in the second half. Oh, 10:15, we're good. Anochi, I am. Now, I don't think that's an egoistic statement to say, I am. Everybody, Sheila Hetty, great writer, Canadian writer, anybody. So, Sheila Hetty, she's wonderful. She says, even I get to call myself a little bit I now and again. Yes, and then you, Betty, and then.
I see the mountain as an eternal fixture. Okay.
Okay.
And I see the utterance, not to touch it, as forming a people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's keeping us together apart from the mountain with the perspective of the mountain. And since I think the whole point of bringing us out of Mitzrayim,
yes,
was to create the people.
Right.
Who acknowledge and worship a single God.
Yeah, yeah.
That you needed to have the physical space to make a people.
Right. And yet, if it was a permanent structure that we all needed to stay around, right, we'd be immobile, we'd be stuck in the desert, and we would have Mount Sinai as an actual place. It wasn't St. Catherine's. Some people think it's St. Catherine's. Oh, I hiked Mount Sinai. You've ever gotten that picture? I'm on Mount Sinai. Right. No. But we pull the form. What's exciting about seeing communal structures is the best, and this is why I think God in the Bible, Jack Miles, you know, that biography of God, how God slowly pulls back. It's almost like you're pulling that form out, and then you just see a dancing Israeli dance, you know, that Yemenite rite is what it's about. That's the permanent positioning that God truly...
The people are what's permanent.
Right. And that God doesn't go away. It's still a very palpable center, and that's why I think the horror is probably the best invention of Jewish cultural life, yeah.
But I also see it, I mean, the people as they're getting close to being a unit of like people or
yes,
like things. It's the journey, at least for me it would be, the journey is as important as, because you're trying to reach there, you may never reach there, but it's the journey that's the important thing.
And to recognize that there's somebody to the right of me, to the left of me, all around me, and not, it's not the mountain. I don't know, it's almost Karate Kid, like, you know, Zen wisdom. It's not about the mountain. And it's not about, and thusly God dost say thee thus. It's about, oh my gosh, here we are feeling something. Mashu, v'yikdashtem hayom en machar. And so now I want to move forward in this beautiful thing, because if we don't get to the Ten Commandments, I think I've really given you short shrift.
We always get through the entire Torah.
Oh, good, good. Well, we'll get to that, because all of Torah is in that first word, both oral and written. Right.
Or one page.
Well, there you go. So 4:14. Now,
so I think we're different editions.
Oh, please. So chapter 19... We're still back. Chapter 19, verse 13. When the ram's horn sounds a long blast, vayovel, vayihi, bimshuch hayovel, in the drawing out. You know, mishicha, mashiach. This is actually that drawn out sound. Any musicians here? No? Okay. Sforzando. Which is counter to music, that it actually gets louder with duration. Then, Hema, When you hear that sound, Hema Ya'alu Vahar, and then they will feel risen within the mountain. It doesn't say Al Hahar, now you jump on the mountain. And then it says in the mountain. That moment. Verse 14. This is such a radical shift, and you're going to have to apologize for Moses for me. I'm really... So you heard it, right? You heard the speech, you heard the poetry, you heard the beauty, eagle's wings, so great. And so Moses comes down to the mountain and people and warn them. Wash your clothes. That's what you got? Wash your clothes. And then he says to the people, be good, be right, 3 days, don't sleep with a woman. Huh? Ma? Did we hear any of that? The washing your clothes, yeah. How did Moses take this last turn? I mean, it's like I left my mom this morning, you know, she's like, are you sure you want to wear that sweater? I don't know, you know, it's like, just don't have bad breath. That was the last thing, you know, you talk and your future and your life, it's just caring. And just make sure to have a Ricola before you speak to people. Really? Mom, this is it? Why? Why?
That's what moms do.
Okay, but why Moses? And this is what, why? I mean, he messed up here. I don't think I have to apologize for God here why you're not supposed to be intimate with a partner. I can explain why I think Moses was thinking it, but why? Why shift in all this beautiful stuff?
It's focus, yeah.
Focus. To remain absolutely present.
That's pretty much what I was going to say. It's not about our relationship at this point with our spouse. It's really about our time with God. You know, getting ready for something at a much higher level.
So if we're supposed to prepare, so I just want to criticize Moses for a bit. I mean, it's okay. He can handle it. You know, he had the B'nai Yisrael at him for 40 years. So if it's about focus...
It's saying, don't be distracted.
Don't be distracted.
From this basic relationship with the divine.
If I were to say that, and it may be that. I mean, one midrash obviously is intimacy with one other person alienates you from the rest of the people. You're totally focused and fused on one other, and carnality in Canaanite religion and other ways that they would use, honestly, temple prostitutes to create holiness, that's not the way we roll. And that could be that counter. Yes? It would be so helpful if you tell me your names, because then I can...
Yeah, Dave Russo.
Dave, a pleasure.
Wouldn't you conjoin that prescription with make sure your clothes are washed? In other words, I read this as saying... This causes impurity.
Yes, absolutely. And that traditionally, so sexuality, you can't be right. Out of the camp, and
the
therefore...
Coming, make sure you're pure. It's not so much about focus as it is purity.
Yeah.
For the day, you know.
So why not say that?
Yeah, right.
My name's Richard.
Hi, Richard.
I think the issue that you're trying to go to is the fact that Moses is embellishing what God has said, in the sense that God says in verse 10, let them wash their clothes, and then the next thing is simply, let them be ready for the third day. And then Moses is...
Which is what all of you are saying.
And then Moses is taking it upon himself to essentially tell God, listen, I've been traveling with these folks for a while. You haven't seen what they're capable of getting up.
That's right.
So I will take it upon myself.
Don't party. Don't party. You didn't tell me not to party. I'm not saying that you should.
Right.
But he does deduce... And already you're hearing this relationship that Moses gets it. I can't see your face. I don't have a direct dictation. It's going to come out a little differently. And I think he really missed the mark here. Because, frankly, I'll just be frank with you, I think that we have under-eroticized the Mount Sinai experience about the holy eroticism between humanity and the divine. And he is so paranoid about it because of perhaps Nadav and Abihu, the sons that got smoked. Perhaps later on, we're thinking about Zimri and Cosby and the Pinchas, the Midianite kind of conflagration. But he's speaking for God. So it's either great chutzpah or great insight. I'm saying he misdirected that freaked the people out in a way that was not necessary. Because there's two different things. If I say to you, just make sure you're clean and ready, I know how to work that out. But if you put it as a sexual prohibition, don't approach a woman, and I like that you said a wife, but I don't really hear that so much. Oh, that's what God's about. So God's Puritan. I get that. But that's Moses telling you that God's Puritan. And so I think we can mistranslate. Even the guy at the top of the mountain who's getting the direct dictate gets it slightly wrong. I'm okay. I'll be all right. Na'aseh v'nishma, even if I'm not getting it perfect. Like, is everything here? I'm like, oh my God, I'm being recorded for perpetuity, right? But it's not perfect. It's the best attempt that we have to get that. And I think staying clean and staying, and just to this point about prepare for 3 days. Stay pure. It's so hard the day before to stay that way. And so what do? We jump in. Oh, I mustn't do that. I shouldn't do that. Or maybe I can do that. No, I can't. Maybe do that. No, I can't. I spend so much of my time preparing. It's like, ooh, I should say this. Don't say that. Hey, that's not the direction. Empty out a bit. See what happens when you're about to have such a radical experience. Yeah. Yes, please.
Judith.
Yes.
I have to say that I think these are two life forces. Sex is certainly one of the most powerful and basic of life forces.
Yes.
And I think what we're talking about, the relationship with God and this power of a divine being, is also, it's life we're talking about, of a people and of individuals.
An intimacy that is collective.
Yes.
And can be sensual without being erotically explicit.
But in saying no sex for this amount of days before,
mm-hmm.
I think it's saying the life force that you're witnessing is even greater than the sexual life.
Yeah.
So leave the one aside to participate in the other.
And so what we're hearing is beautiful Torah, Elu ve'elu, Divrei Elohim Chayim, that both of these interpretations, I like giving Moses a hard time, just like I like giving Jacob a hard time. I'm a little hard on myself. That's just the way I am. I'd rather give myself not the benefit of the doubt, and then at the end, you know, he'll be okay. Moses does fine. You know, he doesn't get into the mountain for other reasons. Here, I really do think he misdirects the people to be freaked out, rather than to be in awe. You know, we know this, awful and awesome is that same root. Yes?
But I think that very...
No, yes?
I think that very... we hid with strength in Moses that he translates, but not perfectly, is a setup for a whole learning process for you as a rabbi or anyone. To feel that they're not necessarily, it's not coming from God's lips, it's coming through their experience.
Right.
Of that.
It b'vidaber, which is another midrash on Bamidbar, is within the iteration. And it's not always perfect, which is why I love our high priest has to give a sin offering for his own faults. They're not perfect. You know that Pope, he's talking right now about his inerrancy and whether he can make a mistake, because I think he said, this poor kid's dog died, and he said, oh, your dog's going to be in heaven. And then the doctor to the faith said, no, dogs don't go to heaven in our faith. And he's like, you know, maybe I made a mistake. And then they go, no, even worse now, you said a mistake, and you can't make a mistake. And he says, you know? Yeah, you know that joke when the Pope's Jewish? No, I'm kidding. I'm too far. Forgive me.
Wait. Don't leave that.
No, I'm just saying he's Jesuit in a sense. He's got a very intellectual humanist approach to how we approach these things, as opposed to Benedict XIV, who really saw the doctrine of the faith as the halakha that must be administered vis-a-vis up on high, and a preservationist versus kind of an organic debate within people and Yeah, so I'm a
so
fan.
You said the Pope is Jewish, right?
No, I said the joke is when the Pope's Jewish, and now Catholics are asking themselves,
is the Pope Jewish?
Well, you know, I don't think he's going to mikveh tomorrow, but I do think that his intellectual approach is very different than something we've seen, at least in my life. Yeah.
So I want to go back.
All respect, Papi.
Mary. The purity and the focus.
Yeah.
And the ritual aspect of the washing, because, you know, the context is we as a people are in a really big moment. We're about to get the Ten Commandments, right? And on Sunday, at the end of Shavuot, we actually read the Ten Commandments. So if you think about it, going into Shabbat,
yes.
Like you have a ritual washing.
Yes.
Right before you enter a house of Shiva, right, you're washing. It's like, this is really a big moment. So
and Yom Kippur, you wear white.
Right, so I think that's a big portion of it.
Yes.
And it's really that the people are really getting ready to have kind of their biggest connection to God, to get our most important commandments that are going to become, you know, really the watchword of our faith.
Yes.
And, so I think the whole thing about don't touch the mountain, you need to get pure, you need to stay focused. Moses is going to be up there. He's going to get zapped. Something really big is going to happen. And this is all kind of preparation for that.
And I just challenge us, all of us, right before that moment of preparation, sometimes we do the silliest things because we're so amped and there's space. I don't just drop in. It's 2 days before the interview that I'm a mess. It's not right now. Not that I'm interviewing. We're just studying Torah here, of course. But we're in it. I'm experiencing you listening. 2 days before, when my kids are at their, you know, let's just say, it wasn't the best meatloaf I've ever made. You know, it's a lot going on. And how do you stay focused and intentional before the day? You know, I actually, it's 20, there's a little aside. I actually think the penultimate moment is more important than the actual experience. How you position yourself to approach a scenario is almost more important than, without over projecting and trying to imagine what it is. I've never met many of you. Actually, I've met some of you. So, Mickey, I'll find it.
I can't remember.
I'm going to remember. It's not Shofar at Sinai.
You know, Mickey, it was at Sinai.
Camp Ramah.
Camp Ramah. That's right.
Right.
Oh, Ramah, of course. And okay, good. Nice to see you again.
Glad we said it.
So,
Mickey's our cantor emeritus.
Amen.
And he's the musician on the opposite side of the mountain.
And there we have it. I knew it. It's great to see you. Okay.
The second best shofar blizzer. You're the first.
Well, you know, the longer the shofar, the easier it is to blow. Do you know that?
No. Say that again.
Long shofars, they look mighty, but it's easier to get the sound out. It's those little ones, those are the real, those guys are the, those are the Bert Severinsen, Doc Severinsen. Sorry, I'm not aging myself. Okay, let's go now and let's jump. I just want to get to this third day. We're turning chapter 19, verse 16. For those using the green edition, it's page 415. And now we're here at that third day. B'chiyot HaBoker. What a great verb. It says as morning dawned, but what is lehiyot? What is that Hebrew? Lehiyot is to be. In being morning, in becoming dawn. Vayhi kolot ubrakim va'anan kaved al har. You've got the Wikilai-Lai-Lea. What was the mountain that's about to explode there?
No. Kilauea.
Kilauea. Sorry. It's Kilauea. It's really intense. Right? June gloom is upon us, even in mid-May. Heavy cloud. The kol shofar chazak mayod. And there's this sound that keeps expanding. And I love this. Anybody heard the term haredim? The Haredim, the
yes.
Really observant, the Haredi.
Yeah.
This is where it comes from. V'yechrad kol ha'am. Do you see it here on the third line here on verse 16? The people trembled. And so a Haredi is someone who trembles before God. And this is where that expression, trembling before God, comes. V'yechrad kol ha'am asher b'machaneh. Ve'yotze Moshe et ha'am likrat ha'elohim. I just love that. And so Moses takes them out to go visit God. This is an amazing antiphonal moment of this sound and lightning, and you would think, run away, we're not worthy. And what does Moses do in this moment? Moses becomes that great leader that we know. Yeah, come on, guys. Let's go make a visit. Very intense. V'yitya'tzvu batachtit tahar, and they stood at base camp. Now you could say, as the Midrash does, they're under the mountain because it's over them. But let's leave that for now. I think they're at base camp. V'har Sinai ashan kulo b'dnei asher yarad alav Adonai ba'esh v'yal ashno ka'esh nakivshan v'yachrad kol ha'ar me'od. That was the Hebrew now in verse 18. Mount Sinai and smoke. Adonai had come down in the fire. The smoke rose like a smoke of a kiln. The whole mountain trembled violently. The first verse, the verse right above says, all the people trembled. And now the mountain trembled. Trick question. If both the people and the mountain are simultaneously trembling, what is the condition? So I'm going to say it again. And I think some of you...
Harmonic resonance. I mean, basically, everybody's vibrating together.
Correct. This is why order from chaos makes so much sense to me. And this is why falling in love makes so much sense. You're crazy, you don't know, everything's crazy, but it doesn't matter. Or like the waltz. Anybody watching a Victoria and Albert? Oh, love that waltz scene. So they do this waltz. I always need like a bag when I watch the waltz from afar. Do you know what I'm talking about? Everybody is spinning. I'm like, oh my God, I don't know. 1, 2, 3, 1. And I'm just trying to keep step. I didn't do cotillion. I felt terrible. But what happens when everybody is doing it simultaneously? That harmonic resonance. So now I again ask you, in a time of your life, when has everything been in chaos and you've been in chaos and it feels just fine? I mean, I can give an example, of course. Look, my wife, she passed away from breast cancer. And yeah, it was hard. I was in a bad place. It was very challenging and tough. But when I met someone else who was suffering and they were a mess and I was a mess, great cup of coffee. I can't say it was a great day, but I felt a sense of stability in that chaos. And many of these, you know, mourning group grief sessions, often people couple up in that moment because it's the only place they feel calm.
That connection. That's
a beautiful way to put it. This yacharad, yacharad. So it's not, it's actually, oh wow, that waltz. When everybody's waltzing, it looks almost stasis.
Without the connection, you feel, or I feel, isolated.
Spun out.
And that craziness is so much more painful, isolated, than with the harmonic resonance of people who are undergoing the same thing.
But I don't think we should underestimate the instability that's present when everything is shaking.
Oh,
That even when it was okay, it wasn't okay. Really, things are coming apart. Right?
It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel, it's such a great song for that reason. This is REM in this sense. Yes, absolutely destabilizing. Other moments in your lives, in history, that you felt this, a kind of destabilization, but someone else was also destabilized. The environment was unstable. You were unstable, but as long as you were all doing it together, you guys actually had a certain stability within that. Thinking of things, at least personally, trying to, because I think it's important, bayomaza, really putting yourself in this intense moment.
But like the people don't get it. Like they
say naaseh v'nishma, but they're like, okay,
it turns out they can't handle it.
It is intense. It's too much. No, come back, go. I can't. And go down. And this is when, honestly, this is why it's so hard not to hold on to the mountain. Everything's trembling. You're trying to gain some stability. So what is this next section? 21. Adonai says to Moses, go down, warn the people not to break through, penyehersu el Adonai, to God, to try to break through this cloud, to see, v'nifal mimenu rav, and fall, lest many of them perish. I translate this differently. Lirot. You try to break through. So what do you try to do when you're in this? I used to do this at Space Mountain at Disneyland when I was little. I was scared of roller coasters. So I would have a flashlight and black light when in Space Mountain and be like, oh, I see. I tried to break through to make sure that I knew what the mechanics were. And I think that's what God is kind of warning in this. Because in fear, you want to try to see, at least try to hold on to something tangible. And then God actually double warns. You have to stay in this destabled environment in order to be open to a truly transformative experience. Because if you clasp down and you try to break through, I see it as Icarus. V'nafal mimenu rav. It's a greater fall. When you try this alone and you try to break through and try to get a hold of it, get a grasp of it alone, that's the Icarus moment that you're going to actually fall hard. Not that many will fall, but that the fall from it, from trying to break through, will be great. And, I can think about the great tragedies of like 9/11. To try to understand it, to wrap my head around it, was trying to break through and I fell further. To sit with our, what was it, open hearts, broken hearts open, together in community, to understand I didn't understand, that was a healing moment. And to know the difference. And I think that's horror and Sinai are opposites, but they actually do relate. Yeah.
Well, if you can experience the experience without taking yourself out of it, or apart from it, or touching the mountain, then you will have lived through it, and it will be behind you, or next to you, or in you, but you will know that you can live through a terrible experience.
Right.
And be on the other side of it.
So I make up words all the time.
Yes.
It's really important too. I call it thrival. I don't like survival. Like, I'm a survivor. And I'm not talking about the Shoah, I'm talking about thrival. That somehow, not only did I get through this traumatic, but I've actually grown through it.
So you're a thriviver.
Right, a thriviver. Right, something like that. A thriviver. Yeah, something like that. A thrival.
And God willing, you'll be stronger the next time.
Right.
Because there will be a next time.
Right.
And challenge in life. And you will be stronger and have the fortitude.
And you'll know because you experience it.
You got it. Yeah.
And then how do you do that as a collective, which is so much harder? I teach theology to ninth graders, 14-year-olds. Look, I can barely get adults to get out of their own heads. You imagine you're 14. They're like, I just don't understand how I can get this collective experience. Very hard. Very hard. And how do you move from that challenging time? I think even more challenging is when it's good, when there's beauty that we could collectively acknowledge. Wow, this is not just good, this is not just great, this is holiness happening. This is something that is truly profound that I will live and grow through, which is another type of thrivival. All right, we're working on it. So now we're going to turn the page, chapter 20, the Decalogue. Anybody know Kieslowski's Polish Decalogue? It's a modern interpretation. I just have to mention it every time. Brilliant. Polish tell a series of 10 different commandments. Really top.
What's his name?
Kieslowski. Right?
Kieslowski.
A wonder. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Ah. Okay, that's a different one. That was taking an aside. Forgive me. Okay. Let's shift gears a bit. Tell me, we've only got 5 minutes and I'm about to say the whole thing, right? Ha! Right, 5 minutes.
Don't,
So let's do this. Let me say this.
The whole Ten Commandments. Ten.
Well, I'm going to have an end around. Vayedaber elo. Yeah, see, and we can't be 1 foot on this one. By the way, al regel echad doesn't mean that. In my translation, it means regel is a principle. So can you get Judaism to one principle? And Shammai says that's absurd. Al regel echad is on one rule. Can you just name one rule? And it's basically Google's. Don't do evil things, right? I mean, that was Hillel's own, and then the rest is commentary. So that actually loops right back to this. Our regular chad is, what's said? You know, from the maximalist to the minimalist position. Anochi, right? I am. And I do want to bracket out the Aleph here to, anybody know him? What's number 10? I'm kidding, of course. Don't covet, tachmod, asher le re'echa. So, what was given at Sinai? So, cosmically speaking, everything. The beginning of creation. This is Rashi's first creation. When you read the first Rashi of Breshit Bara, in the beginning created, it says, guess what? No, this is the beginning. Time warp to Mount Sinai because everything's given in this moment. Now, that's cosmic, that's pretty profound, and yet, it's all there. In every moment, everything is in it. Lithium is part of our universe, which was from the beginning of creation. It's in every breath. So I don't have to be mystical or somehow transcendent to believe kol hadevarim. It's all there. And this is also something beautiful with love. When you have that first experience face to face, you know, they say like you see the whole life. I did see this with my wife. When the first time I met her, I saw her as a very old woman. A beautiful, beautiful senior woman. And I got it. It was that moment, Kol HaDevarim. Now, I only got some of that, or did I? See, this is where I don't know. I'm a little mystical that way. So the maximal position that not just the Ten Commandments, but that all of Torah, and not just all of Torah, but all of oral Torah, and not just all of oral Torah, but every single moment is contained within one moment. Very possible, the maximalist position. Now let's move back from everything to, okay. I have these, I saw Mel Brooks' name, Rafur Shlomo. I have these 15, 10. Okay, so actually we have to add that, right? Yeah, so you've got 10, 15, no, 10. Or actually, it's from minimalist to max. Yes. So, what was given? The Ten Commandments. Those laws, which I actually want 10 just to spend a moment. In our tech world, this binary, it's simply ones and zeros. It's do's and don'ts. It's positive and negative. Put the order together. And in fact, if you look closely at our Ten Commandments, I am is not really a positive. It is. But it's to believe in this quantitative something that I can't experience. Certainly don't have any other of them. And don't take God's name. It's not in vain. Not saying vanity is great, it's not. But it is to nothing. It's Shoah, you know the word Shoah? Shav comes from that same root. Shoah, it's absolute obliteration. So if you say God is this, that's making it too much something. But then the third commandment is that God's absolutely nothing. What's the best expression we have of qualitative nothing? Shabbat. That's why you have the fourth commandment. What does it mean to kavod avicha et imecha? Is it how you show it positively? Is it a relationship? That's also not necessarily a positive. I'm just showing you that it's not necessarily a positive commandment. The fifth. And then you have a bunch of don'ts. Don'ts, don'ts, don'ts. It's actually all negative theology. Perhaps. I just want to share with you my theology, which is, I do believe in God. But as soon as I say it, I go, asterisk. Because as soon as I say G-O-D, I feel a little idolatrous. I just put my name on it. Which he tells, or it tells, or but as soon as I say he, she, it, it's wrong. And yet I keep trying to iterate it each and every day of my life. So from this minimalist to this maximist position, I wanted to even take it even closer, which is Anochi, I am. I am somebody. I don't mean each of us as individuals, but I kind of do. But that we are a collective that reaches up towards an Anochi. Not just Ani, but Anochi. A dignified sense of self that each of us have inherently within us. And then that was actually Buber. Like each of these have associated rabbis who have given this. This is Menachem Mendel of Rimanov. It's my fave. What did God say at Sinai? Aleph. And that sense of mystery, that sense of awe. Yes?
But while Aleph doesn't make a sound, the fact that you have to open your mouth to say Aleph means there's intent.
There's...
So...
Oh, it's inhabited. That initial is inhabited.
So there's will.
It is a qualitative nothing that you cannot say. Right. Just like absolute zero is not nothing, mathematically speaking. I'm not a mathematician, but yes.
Oh. He is.
Oh, my. True? It's a very important zero. And I'm not saying Ayin is zero. God's nothing. Oh, my gosh. Who are you, Rabbi? That's the whole trick. But you've got to iterate beyond it. We have to say kol ha-devarim ha-eleh, midaber, ba-midbar. We must figure it out in this thicket of what that relationship means. What do you get?
Ooh. Yeah, discrimination.
Yes. And then it's, the world is open.
It's everything.
Yes.
Without discrimination.
Before saying, you this, not that, which is interesting because then the 10th commandment is, don't covet your neighbor's partner, your neighbor's house, your neighbor's stuff, which is so discriminating, and it's saying, don't do that, which is the same way to say, there is no discrimination. Try to be okay with where everything is in its own place, not to discriminate. You have that, I have this, so I agree with you in that. The Aleph is absolutely open, absolutely willing, if you're willing to hear it. That may just be enough. Aleph. I'm going to give you a final midrash here in our closing moments, which is, so you see the Ten Commandments, right? The Luchot, that's actually beautiful. Aleph through Yud, 1 through 10. My synagogue, they had back in San Francisco, budget deficits, you know, they couldn't... There was some value engineering towards the end, but I really wanted to have just the top, the first word. You're talking about value engineering. Okay, maybe we can't get the whole Ten Commandments, but maybe I can get two words in there, because this is my final theory I want to leave you with. Anochi l'reecha is really what he said, the first and last word, or God said. I'm for your neighbor. I'm here to be with you. I'm here to participate with you. The rest, what's in the middle, is relationship. And so that all of Sinai, all of this experience, so that's the irony back to don't approach a woman. It's all about intimacy. It's all about who we are, but it's not about any of that. And the rest is commentary. And thank you for sharing the commentary.
Thank you.
Thank you, all of you.